Chapter 9. We went outside. Joan and Jake spoke briefly with Bobby and the woman I presumed to be Emma. Then Joan chivied Jake into a car and drove out in a hurry, leaving the stage open for me to do some more snooping. There wasn't any time to waste with lethal magic like that on the loose, and the keys gave me a good excuse to do some more sniffing around. I didn't hold out much hope that anything in Bobby the Bully's head would be important, so I focused on the woman and walked over to them. "Hey, I'm Harry, production assistant." "Emma," the woman said. She was actually very pretty. She had the kind of beauty that seemed to convey a sense of personal warmth, of kindness, a face best suited to smiling. Her eyes were shamrock green, her skin pale, her hair long and red, highlighted with streaks of sunny gold. She wore jeans with a black sweater and made both of them look inviting, but she wasn't smiling. She offered me her hand. "I'm pleased to meet you. I'm glad you were there to help them." "Anyone would have," I said. "Come on, Emma," Bobby said, his expression sullen. "Let's call a cab and go." She ignored him. "I don't think I've seen you around before."
"No, I'm local. A friend introduced me to Arturo, told him I needed a job."
Emma pursed her lips and nodded.
"He's a softy," she said.
"In case no one's told you, this isn't an average day on the set."
"I'd hope not."
"I'm sorry about your friend."
Emma nodded.
"Poor Giselle. I hope she'll be all right. She's from France. Doesn't have any family. I couldn't see her from where I was standing. Was it her throat that was hurt?"
"Yeah."
"Where? I mean, where was she hurt?"
I drew a line on my own face, starting at the back corner of my jaw and curving around to beside my Adam's apple.
"There, back to front."
Emma shuddered visibly.
"God, the scars.
If she lives, I doubt she'll mind them."
"Like hell she won't," Emma said. "They'll show. No one will cast her."
"Could have been worse." She eyed me.
"You don't approve of her profession?"
"I didn't say that."
"What, are you a religious type or something?"
"No, I just..."
"Because if you are, I'd like to tell you right now that I'm not. And I don't appreciate it when people pass judgment on my line of work."
"I'm not religious.
I get so tired of hypocritical bastards who..."
She started to say something else, then made a visible effort and shut her mouth.
"I'm sorry.
I'm not usually oversensitive. Sometimes I just get sick of people telling me how bad my work is for me, how it corrupts my soul, that I should abandon it and give my life to God."
"You're not gonna believe me," I said, "but I know exactly what you mean."
"You're right," she said. "I don't believe you." Her belt chirped, and she drew a cell phone from its clip.
"Yes?" She paused for a moment.
"No."
"No, sweetheart. Mommy already told you before I left, if Gracie says you get one cookie, then you only get one cookie. She's the boss until Mommy comes home."
She listened for a moment and then sighed.
"I know, sweetie. I'm sorry. I'll be home soon, okay? I love you too, sweetie. Kisses. Bye-bye."
"Kid?" I asked.
She gave me half of a smile as she put the phone back onto her belt.
"2. Their grandmother is with them."
I frowned.
"Wow. I never really thought about, actresses with children."
"Not many do," she said. Does their father mind your career?"
Her eyes flashed hotly.
"He isn't involved with them. Or me."
"Oh," I said. I offered her the keys. "From Jake, for the car. Sorry if I offended you. I didn't mean to." She exhaled, and it seemed to let out the pressure of her anger. She accepted them.
"Not your fault. I'm tense."
"Everyone around here seems to be," I said.
"Yeah, it's this film. If it doesn't do well, we're all going to be looking for work."
"Why?"
She shrugged a shoulder.
"It's complicated, but we're all on contract with Silverlight. Arturo left them, but he had managed to slip something into his own contract with the studio that would let him continue hiring cast from Silverlight for 3 months after his departure."
"Oh," I said. "Jake said something about another movie."
She nodded.
Arturo wanted to do three of them. This is the second. If the movies go over well, Arturo will have a name for himself, and we'll all have leverage to either quit the contract with Silverlight or renegotiate better terms.
I see, I said. And if the movies crash, Silverlight will never pick up your contracts.
Exactly, she frowned. And we've had so many problems. Now this.
Come on, Emma, Bobby called. I'm starving. Let's go find something.
You should start practicing some self-restraint for a change. The woman's green eyes flashed with irritated anger, but she smoothed it away from her face and said, I'll see you here this afternoon then, Harry. Nice to meet you.
Likewise. She turned and glowered at Bobby as she walked to the car. They got in without speaking, Emma driving, and left the lot. I walked over to my car, pensive. Thomas and Arturo had been right. Someone had whipped out one hell of a nasty entropy curse. Assuming that this wasn't a coincidental focus of destructive energy, the mystical equivalent of being struck with a bolt of lightning. Sometimes energy can build up due to any number of causes. Massive amounts of emotion, traumatic events, even simple geography. That energy influences the world around us. It's what gives the Cubbies the home field advantage, though that whole billy goat thing sort of cancels it out. Leaves an intangible aura of dread around sites of tragic and violent events and causes places to get a bad reputation for strange occurrences. I hadn't sensed any particular confluence of energies until just before the curse happened to Giselle and Jake, but that didn't entirely rule out coincidence. There is a whole spectrum of magical energies that are difficult to define or understand. There are thousands of names for them in every culture. Mana, psychic energy, totem, juju, chi, bioetherial power, the force, the soul. It's an incredibly complex system of interweaving energy that influences good old Mother Earth around us, but it all boils down to a fairly simple concept. Shit happens. But then again, other people around Arturo had been hurt. I could buy that lightning could strike once, but if I hadn't interfered, it would have hit four times. Not much chance for coincidence there. No matter how much I might have wished it, the energy that had caused Giselle to slip into the glass door, the glass to break and cut her, and the lights to fall down and electrify the floor was not one of those natural hot spots of power. It had swirled past me like some vast and purposeful serpent, and it hadn't gone after the first person to cross its path. It had ignored me, Joan, Jake, Bobby, and Emma, and gone into the shower after the girl. So Arturo was wrong about at least one thing. He wasn't the target of the Malocchio. The women around him were. And that pissed me off. Call me a Neanderthal if you like, but I get real irrational about bad things happening to women. Human violence was at its most hideous when a woman was on the receiving end, and supernatural predators were even worse. That was why seeing Thomas in Trans Justine had set me off. I knew the girl was willing, sure. I was pretty sure Thomas didn't want any harm to come to her. But the more primitive instincts in me only saw that she was a woman and Thomas had been preying upon her. No matter what the rational part of my head thinks, when I see someone hurt a woman, my inner Gigantopithecus wants to reach for the nearest bone and go Kubrickian on someone's head. I got into the car, frowning more deeply, and forced myself to calm down and think. I took deep breaths until I relaxed enough to start analyzing what I knew. The attacks had the feeling of vendetta to it. Someone had a grudge against Arturo and was deliberately striking women near him. Who would hold a grudge that vicious? A jealous woman, maybe. Especially since he was a man with three ex-wives. Madge was in business with Arturo, though. She didn't seem to me the sort who would jeopardize her fortunes with something so primitive and intangible as vengeful hatred. The most recent wife, Trisha, was in the same situation, though I hadn't yet met her. The other ex-wife, Lucille, maybe, was not supposed to be in the picture. Could she be using magic to get a little payback? I shook my head and started my car.
I'd been briefly exposed to an entropy curse once. It had been a lot more powerful than the Malocchio that had nearly killed Jake and Giselle. I barely survived it, even with a hefty arsenal of magic and the sacrifice of a good man's life to divert the curse from me. I'd saved Jake and Giselle, but I'd been lucky. It could as easily have been me getting electrocuted in a pool of my own blood. I'd managed to mitigate the Malocchio, barely, but there was nothing to say that it couldn't happen again. And it was more than possible that next time the lance of vicious magic would be aimed right at me. I started up the Blue Beetle and headed for my office, pondering on the road. I didn't have enough information to make a solid guess on a perpetrator. Maybe it would make more sense to examine the murder weapon, as it were, and determine how it was being used. Curses had the same sort of limitation as any other spell, after all, which meant that whoever was sending the evil eye had to have some sort of means of directing the magic at a target. Body parts worked best. A lock of hair, nail clippings, and fresh blood were the most common items used, but they weren't the only ones. A poppet, a little dolly dressed up like the intended victim, could also be used to aim a malevolent spell. I've heard you can even employ a good photo. But targeting the spell was only one part of the process. Before the killer could send it anywhere, he had to gather up the energy to make it happen. A curse that strong would require a whole lot of work, gathering and focusing raw magic in one place. And after that, the energy would have to be molded, shaped into its desired result. Even among the magically gifted, that kind of discipline was rare. Sure, any of the White Council could do that as a matter of routine, but the White Council didn't include everyone with magical skill. Most weren't talented enough to apply for an apprenticeship, and there were plenty of people who washed out and never made it through their schooling. Magic this powerful would be a dangerous business for someone new to the use of magic. Odds were good that this wasn't some petty, jealous whim of an arcane dabbler. Someone with a disturbing amount of ability was methodically committing murder. But why? Why kill women working for Arturo? What effect would it have? The people involved in his films were clearly very nervous. Maybe someone was attempting to spread terror to cause Arturo's business venture to implode. Vengeance of some kind could be a motive, but after a moment's thought, I decided that greed opened up the field to more possibilities. Greed is a nice, sterile motivation. If the money's right, you don't need to know someone to take advantage of them. You don't have to hate them or love them or be related to them. You don't even have to know who they are. You just have to want money more than you want them to keep on breathing. And if history is any indicator, that isn't a terribly uncommon frame of mind. I parked in my building's lot and stomped up the stairway to my office. Who would gain by Arturo's ruin? Silverlight Studios. I nodded. That line of thought fit a lot better than some sort of demented vengeance kick. It was a good place to get started, and I had a couple of hours to put to use. With luck, I could dig up the information I would need to support, or demolish, the idea of a bad guy with dollar signs where his conscience should be. I opened my office door, but before I could go inside, I felt something cold and hard press against the back of my neck, the barrel of a gun. My heart fluttered into sudden, startled panic. "Go into the office," said a quiet, rough voice, relaxed and masculine. "Don't make this any louder than it has to be."